The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Yes, you got the right place at the exact right time. This is Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilm U Works, Danny Pommels, and Paul Hudrick giving you what you need to know. We're here quarantined just like you. Thanks for tuning in. No guest co-host today. You just get Paul and all his fabulousness and me and me and my down-to-earthness.
Oh, I'm very I don't know about all that, but all right.
How you feeling, bro?
You know, hanging in there, man, day by day. We're still healthy, still safe over here, so all we can really ask for, right? I mean, you know, trying to keep myself entertained.
Right. The glass is always half full because we are happy, healthy, and safe and sane as well. So
relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively speaking. But I see you working hard per usual, whether you're WFH working from home or at the office, because you have another mock draft up on the website as we're closing in on whenever this draft will happen. NFL draft on deck first, but the NBA draft waiting in the wings. Maybe this season gets completed. But a feather in our cap, Dr. Fauci, you know, giving it the cosign to the fact that returning to playing sports with the players in quarantine and no fans in the stands is, in his estimation, a viable way to finish out these seasons. So we will get a close to the NBA season, but the draft is upcoming, Paul, and you have a Sixers-only mock on the website. I encourage everyone to check that out at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. What have you uncovered from your mock draft, Paul? Did your mind change at all, or were there any adjustments that you made?
Yeah, I mean, for me, so this is my first one, preliminary Sixers-only mock draft, so I just wanted to, like, kind of examine the things and look at a few guys that I really like. And when I looked at the first round, there's a lot of guys that Sixers fans want. Maybe not a specific player, but they have a type of player they want. And most fans want a shot creator. I'm here to tell you that I don't think there is a shot creator that fits what they want. As far as when we talked to Elton Brand last year, he said he wanted an older, experienced player. Then he went out and he traded up to get Matisse Thybulle, who is 22 years old and a four-year player. Now, I also am not sure that that player is available. I don't think there is a guy. So the Sixers will pick, as of right now, at 22, which would have been the Oklahoma City pick, which, thank you know, for the Sixers, they should be thanking Oklahoma City for going on a nice little run this season, having a good year and conveying that pick, or else the Sixers would not have had a first-round pick. But in that range, you know, I don't see that quite perfect prospect for them. So for me, I think they trade up. And I see a guy who could fit a couple boxes. He'd be 21 by the time the next season starts. And he could shoot the lights out, was arguably the most prolific three-point shooter in college basketball last season. And that would be Aaron Nesmith from Vanderbilt. And he's not a shot creator type.
Good job on that pronunciation.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Shout out to Ryan Brennan, our Sixers producer, because I was saying Naismith. That's what it looks like to me. But it is Nesmith. Now we know. That's the guy I think that I would be looking to maybe trade up. He's probably a back end of the lottery kind of guy. That would be the guy I'd be looking for. Because, again, you know, 2 years in college, did have his past season cut short because of injury. But it'll be, like I said, 21 by the time the season starts. Danny, he shot 52% from three last year on over eight attempts per game. It was only 14 games, and he didn't get into conference play because he got hurt. So the competition would have stiffened, and maybe that number levels out a little bit. But still, Danny, 14 games, taking over eight threes a game, and he's at 52%. And when you watch him, it is off the dribble. It is off screens. It is a little bit of everything, off balance, hands in his face. He's 6'6". He's long. You know, again, the weaknesses are going to be he's not a shot creator. He can attack a closeout if a team pursues him too aggressively, but he's not a guy who's going to take people off the dribble. He's a decent athlete, not a great athlete. So defensively, like, you're maybe looking at a guy who is passable, but maybe not elite. But if he can hit shots at the rate that he hit them in college, to me, when I watched him, I saw a longer version of Buddy Hield. That's what I saw. Because just a guy who can hit a shot from anywhere in any capacity with anybody in his face, but just doesn't have that explosive athleticness and doesn't have that create off the dribble ability. But he's a guy, to me, if you were to trade up, and in my scenario, I have them trading picks, I believe, is 34 and the one pick in the 50s with the Boston Celtics to get to pick 17. So this way Danny Ainge can be happy he gets two more second-round picks. They can still get a decent big man prospect, speaking from the Celtic perspective, at pick 22, because there will still be a couple guys on the board. They don't really – you know, they have so many good perimeter players. They need a big. So I would think that that would be what Danny Ainge is looking for in that range. So if he goes back to 22, I still think he could find that guy there.
So you're saying that – I believe they have five total picks.
Five total.
You're saying they're going to use, in essence, three of those, the two second-rounders and one first-rounder, to move up in the first round to draft this kid.
That would be my plan. And listen, they sold how many second-rounders last year? So what's the difference? They traded one to get five last year, and then they traded two other ones. They sold two other ones. They didn't trade two ones. They sold two other ones. So why not use it to get a trade and get a guy who could help you theoretically right out of the gate and maybe develop him for the future to be a guy who could, you know, be a part of that?
That key word for me is that word develop, because here the Sixers are.
Right now too, Danny.
Say it again.
I said he could help right now too.
I think that the key word develop, help right now, right? So, I you look at rotation, you look at the names already on the roster, and the guys they've already had in the pipeline who they're still trying to bring along. I mean, you know, suddenly this is a veteran-heavy roster. The opportunities are a lot slimmer than they were. We were already trying to figure out how the heck this postseason roster was going to look with, you know, Mike Scott and Furkan and Shake Milton and those guys coming off the bench. I know somebody's slipping my mind right now, but my point being is the fact that here we are, have another player who they're going to have to fit in. I mean, we're already at the point where Brett Brown told Shake Milton he didn't fit into the roster after the All-Star break. So here we are bringing another kid in who's going to have to find his way. Of course, there's always room for shooters, particularly around Ben Simmons, and especially a dude with no conscience that's shooting eight freaking threes a game in college. But speak to that a little bit, because I'm a little apprehensive on how a new body that doesn't have a defined role, or you don't know what to expect from them is what I should say. You don't know what to expect from him because he's a rookie. How do you feel like that he would fit into the Sixers' development of the other people they have in the fold?
Optionality and competition, Danny. That's what it's got to be. And that's fine. That's what you need. That's what all teams need. No one has their bench, you know, short of maybe a couple teams has their bench 100% figured out. You're adding, like you mentioned, to the mix of Matisse, to Furkan Korkmaz, to Shake Milton. Maybe he's more consistent than Furkan Korkmaz shooting the basketball. Maybe he gives you a little bit more on the defensive end.
How is that possible? How could that be?
Oh, settle down. But it's all about having those options, Danny. And as a first-round pick, you have him for 4 years. So Furkan Korkmaz's deal runs out at the end of next year. So does Shake Milton's. So you might not have those guys beyond next year.
Robinson,
so it's
the third,
good.
And Alec Burks are also,
they're
going
to be gone this offseason. Right. Exactly. So you need guys in the pipeline that could fill those roles. And there's nothing wrong with adding more. And again, adding more competition, because if you don't perform, if you don't produce, this is a team that's trying to win a championship. So if you're not producing, we got another guy we're bringing in. We're going to see if he can produce. So having those options, I think, is a great thing. Having too many good young wings, Danny, sounds like a phenomenal problem to have, especially for the Sixers, when you're looking at a team that needs to build around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Young guys who are athletic and can shoot the basketball, they need all the help they can get in that regard.
And I guess, you know, when you look at the full picture, they, you know, part of the reason why Tobias Harris landed here is because Landry Shamet was so valuable. I would hate to see them go that way so quickly on a great young player like they did Landry, although they obviously were trying to upgrade with Tobias, and he did provide an upgrade. But I guess that's an option as well, that if he's a player who becomes, you know, comes into his own quickly like Landry did and can shoot as well, a la Landry, then possibly he could be something that they, you know, move at some point if they do have a surplus of players coming off the bench or other players they like more, you know, than him. Do you feel like there's some value for them any other ways in the draft?
So if I'm being honest with you, Danny, I'm looking at it the way I did this particular mock. I looked at it from the Sixers' perspective. Like, this is what I think the Sixers could do, fitting, you know, when I factor in what Elton Brand says, what they did last year, what they're looking at. To me, I'm not 100% sold on this route. To me, again, we talk about shot creators. A guy I really like is who, again, we found another guy I can't even say pronunciation. Jeez. Now we can pronounce his name correctly, and that's Kira Lewis, not Kira Lewis, from Alabama. The kid is really dynamic, playmaking point guard, can score, can take people off the dribble, has a shot that is, again, we use that word development, not quite there, but he's over, I think he's over 80% from the free throw line. So really promising shot-making ability in his future. But he's 19 years old, and again, we talk about Allen Iverson. Every time we talk about him, he gets skinnier. It's the same with this kid. He's like 165 pounds soaking wet. So he's young, he's skinny, he's got some development to do, but I think the payoff could be huge. I saw Kevin O'Connor for The Ringer does a really good job with his draft stuff. He just released his first big board, and he has, I believe he had Kira Lewis around the Sixers range, like 23 or 22. One of his comps, Lou Williams, and I can see a little bit of that. A young guy, skinny guy coming into the league, but a lot of scoring potential, and I can see a little bit of that. So for me, that might be personally the direction I would lean in, but I don't see the Sixers doing that.
Well, I think what you're saying is, you know, that's like the plan, the 1A to if the Sixers have another choice or if they trade up and their player's not available. And the skinny thing, you know, after the way Ja Morant took the league by storm, bro, I'm just – because I felt that way. I felt like, man, Ja, man, he's too thin to win. You know, he's barely 6'1", however tall he is, 6'2", maybe.
I think might be more like 6'3 or 6'4, but yeah, I get your point.
Well, all right. If we're in the era of transparency when it comes to height in the NBA, I don't know if he's quite 6'4, but all I'm saying is that all it takes is the will and the athleticism, and here we are. And this kid, you know, flat out rookie of the year. We saw him put guys in the rim. We saw him, you know, acrobatics to the rim. You know, maybe that being skinny played in his favor because he's so slender and can get skinny and get to the cup and things like that. So I'm all for, you know, even you know, some of these, you know, younger kids that you see out here, like LaMelo Ball and Thon Maker's brother, who also is eligible for the draft in the coming years. Like, these dudes are super skinny coming out of college and high school. So I don't know. I think I'm looking at that differently. I don't know if it's such a detriment anymore because, you know, if you can jump and shoot, all of a sudden it doesn't matter as much as if you can bang in this positionless basketball era where it's a little bit more finesse than force.
Yeah, I just think that, again, this is just going from, like, the Sixers standpoint of what they like and what they seem to favor as opposed to what I like. Because to me, I'm with you. I draft a kid like this who I think has elite potential to be a scorer, and I think that's worth sitting on, you know, and developing him for a couple of years. And maybe by next year he puts on a little weight and he can score a little bit. Maybe he – I mean, I guess the argument would be, Danny, for the player himself, it might be better for him to be in a Ja Morant situation where he goes to a team that's not as good. They just give him the ball, tell him to make some mistakes and run around and fly around. And because that's what Ja Morant has gotten at. Like, it just hypothetically, and my dream come true, Ja Morant were a Philadelphia 76er, he wouldn't be afforded the liberties that he was afforded with the Memphis Grizzlies. You know what I mean? So, but a guy like Lewis, he's probably going to be stuck in a spot where he's going to get drafted by a good team because he's probably going to go in that 20s range. But he's probably going to have to spend at least, I would think, at least a year in the G League, getting bulked up, getting stronger, and learning about that physicality of the game. So, again, to me, I would be on board with that. I think a lot of Sixers fans would be disappointed because he's a guy that's probably not going to help him this year. But to me, that would also be – that would be the route I would prefer them to go.
You should check out Paul's Sixers Only Mock Draft on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. We also want to thank everyone who subscribes from the website and wherever you get your podcasts. Keep those 5-star ratings and comments, thoughts, suggestions, questions coming. Speaking of G League, Paul, suddenly the NBA landscape has turned on its ear a bit because even though NBA basketball is the one-and-done rule in effect where you can't be drafted into the NBA until you're – graduating class from high school has passed a year, so you have to have played 1 year in college or somewhere else. They suddenly now have created a pathway for players to skip college and go straight into this developmental program that they have where players will get paid. They will play with a mixture of veterans and other players like themselves who are skipping college and going into this development league. And Jalen Green out of Fresno, California is now the prototype for this because he signed the first contract of about $1 million, which consists of a salary as well as, you know, a stipend for college as well. I see this, you know, I don't know, you know, obviously they're not going to get the credit for it. LaMelo Ball definitely was mentioned because RJ Hampton, both went over to Australia to try to skip college and just turn pro immediately. I know a lot of credit. I don't know if that LeVar Ball league that he had with a bunch of these players that didn't want to play in the college. He kind of curated them, was paying them, and as like a you know, a yin to the yang of the NCAA. What do you make of this whole emergence of this new way to get into the NBA, and do you feel like it's a long overdue, or what's your perspective?
Well, to me, the Trailblazers actually like Brandon Jennings. You know, that was the guy who really, when the one and done rule became a thing, he was the first guy to say, "Nah, I'm not going to college. I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to make some money, and then I'm going to come back and enter the draft." And he did. Didn't have the greatest NBA career, but he had a solid career. But yeah,
I'll never forget that 55 he had his rookie year.
Oh
though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget that one, but.
He had his moments. He definitely had his NBA moments. But, yeah, that's the route he chose to go. And I applaud the NBA, and I applaud the players that choose to do this. To me, when you look at the NCAA system, I mean, I'm just going to say it. It's not fair. It's just these guys make no money while the colleges make all the money, and there's no guarantee, like, there's no guarantee that it's going to improve their draft stock. You don't know what's going to happen that year in college. I mean, I'm sure – and Danny, I'm sure you watched the Ben Simmons documentary, the one-and-done documentary he did. And yeah. The one thing that took me is I respect I go back and forth on it, but I kind of respect him in the sense that he said, like, what am I going to learn in one semester in college? And it's fair. What are you going to learn in one semester in college? This outlines a better system where if you want to get an education – you can still do that, and they will pay for it. And it's not just, oh, hey, you have to go to classes while you're also playing basketball. No, you focus on basketball. You take the classes when you want to take the classes, and you can chip away at your degree. That is a much better way to do it. You and I both went to college. College is freaking hard. Like, it's not that easy. It was hard enough for me to prioritize all the things I needed to do, let alone be a NBA prospect trying to go to classes and do all that too and juggle all that. So from that standpoint, I think it's a much better system. I like the fact that the kid gets paid right away. He can get endorsement deals. Again, going back to that Ben Simmons documentary, he had Nike waiting for him as soon as he was done at LSU to make a little bit of extra money. So to me, obviously it's not all about money, but if entities are going to make money off of these kids, it's only fair that they should also have the opportunity to get paid. So from that perspective, I love it. I think the NBA did a really good job covering their bases as far as, hey, you can stay in the country. You don't have to go overseas. We will pay you, and we will pay you pretty darn well. You are free to get endorsements. And, hey, if you want to go to college and get your education, we'll give you that opportunity too.
And just to piggyback on that last comment you made, in the article I read, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, who's the president of
one of my favorites, by the way, one of my favorite players of all time,
bro, Atlanta Hawks Sharif Abdur-Rahim was must see TV.
Vancouver Grizzlies, I'm talking about, yeah. No.
Okay, all right, we can take that too. But he made the point that not only are these players going maybe to Australia to play or what have you, they also have to send the scouts over there to check them out and to gauge, you know, where they might fit in the draft process and things like that. So that was probably a strain on the NBA as well. And also, you know, to co-sign you, man, like the NCAA system is a farce because you're putting the kids in a position where you're forcing them to go to school where they're clearly there only to play basketball. So, like, who's benefiting? Because it's not the kids, because they're not actually – they're not as engaged in the education part of the schooling as you would want a student to be. And then on the flip side, the schools and the coaches aren't benefiting because they're not getting the full engagement that the player can provide. So I just look at it as like something that's been long overdue. What the NBA and the NCAA need to do is get on the same page, because if college football and college baseball can figure out something that works where the players, once they commit, they have to stay for a certain amount of time, and then they're eligible for the draft process. To me, like, the one and done thing is just such a mockery, particularly when you got guys like Carmelo Anthony or you know, other names who are slipping my mind right now. But I just don't think that you're getting any benefit other than the NCAA getting the time to market and benefit from who the player is and their brand. You know, when you go into the bookstore and you see a number 5 or number 4 Michigan jersey, you know that's Jalen Rose or Chris Webber, but Jalen Rose or Chris Webber aren't benefited from any of those sales or products. So I just hope that the stipend and the college part, some of the details I haven't quite seen them, you know, fleshed out as I would. But if you look at the stipend part, like, you know, the likelihood that Jalen Green will go back to school, you know, I don't know what that percentage is, and I don't know him personally to know.
He
said, but what he said and what happens can be two different things.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, if you give me the money, and I already signed a $1 million shoe contract, I already have at least $500,000 from here, I'm projected to be the number one pick, the incentive to go back to school falls by the wayside at some point.
Well, isn't that not what life should be about there too? Because, like, not everybody goes to college. Not everybody's cut out for college. Not everybody wants to go to college. Some people want to do a trade. Some people want to get right into the job market. So to me, I think it's you were taking away the choice before, whereas now they have a choice. If you would like to get that education, if you would like to do that so that when your MBA career is over, you have something to fall back on, then you have it. If that's not what you want to do, if college isn't your thing, then you don't have to go. And be really smart with your money then, I guess, because if your MBA career doesn't work out, you have that to fall back on too. So it's a choice. And I think that was the big issue before, is that there wasn't one. It was you have to go to school for a year. And I think farce is the right word, Danny. I really do. I would say, to play devil's advocate, though,
yeah,
the one concern I would have is we talk about that it'll be a G League team. It'll be made up of young high school guys right out of high school and then also a select veteran players. They won't play a full G League game slate. I think it was 20 games or so that they're going to play. My concern would be when you look at a LaMelo Ball and you look at an RJ Hampton, they're playing in competitive leagues with grown men. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case on a nightly basis in the G League, because those guys aren't maybe on that level, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There are not as many veteran guys who maybe are playing over in Australia or in the Euro League, what have you. So that would be my fear. I mean, when we had Mark Jackson on, he talked about how competitive it is over there and how those guys are treated. So it won't be the same deal. So my fear, I guess, would be, for the players' development, if it's good, if that competition is good enough for them to develop their games, and then also from a scouting standpoint, is the competition good enough for the evaluators to get a good enough look at these guys in the right positions in a strong enough competition.
Yeah, man. I think, you know, who they're playing, how many games they're playing, and how that's balanced with the actual development. I think that's the thing, is that they're trying to bring these kids along in an NBA atmosphere and then prepare them for, you know, to be drafted. Those details I'm unsure about, and I probably some of that stuff we'll only know once we see it. But you know, it's intriguing. I'm sure these games will be televised, and there'll be a lot of, you know, hoopla surrounding a lot of these kids. I mean, just imagine if, you know, bro, just imagine if you got like Zion and LaMelo both skipping college and on this team, like they might be more attractive than like the lower half of the NBA teams. You know what I'm saying?
With legit,
like,
no, all these 100%. Yep.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. You already have another Isaiah Todd today, who was another top recruit, another five-star guy, who said he's going to go with the plan as well. So you're going to have multiple guys do this at least. So I am really fascinated by it, and I am really intrigued to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I am the same. And if you have some time, go on YouTube. I guess everyone has some time now, right? So we all can go on YouTube and go to YouTube. Look up this kid, Jalen Green, man. He is the real deal. Will be fun to watch. And I don't know, man. It just he is just, you know, you look at him, you look at LaMelo Ball, you know, both about 6'7", skinny, can shoot and handle the right. It's just the prototype and the way these players are coming out now, man. I see a little bit of a change in the guard, because – everybody's got skills, man. No matter how big you are, you can shoot the three, you can dribble. And I don't know if that's like a part of the thing coming from like the And-One, you know, era where, you know, dribbling it was so prolific and fun. But, you know, all these kids are so skilled and multifaceted and do so much. It's just imagine, you know, me or you, young high school kid going against, you know, the Jalen Greens and LaMelo Balls and of the world. It's just so many kids overmatched.
Well, it's funny because you say that, because you talk about like falling into YouTube holes and all that. So I stumbled upon the fact that DeJuan Wagner's son, DeJuan Wagner Jr., I think he's going to be a junior at Camden, is already one of the like best high school players in the country. And look at his bloodline, man. His grandpa, Milt, who went to Camden, right, went to Louisville and played in the league. Yep. And then DeJuan, who unfortunately had some health issues, or else who knows what kind of NBA career he would have had. But I played against him in high school when he was no joke. He was unbelievable.
And how now many, how many did he score against y'all?
Ah, dude, I don't even. The one game he hung at least 40 on us. Another time it was only like 30, but they won the game by like 40. So like,
wait, you got all easy then, bro. You got all easy.
Oh yeah, I know. He didn't put 100 on us. I know. He didn't put 100 on us. I know. Nah, but I was talking to Noah Levick about it. It's like watching him in person when I was still like playing in high school was like my first real big realization of like, nope, I'm not good. Because this guy so ridiculous.
Was he the best high school player you ever seen play?
In person? Not even close.
Okay.
He's probably the greatest player in New Jersey history. I mean, he was unbelievable. No, I'm just,
you know what? Because I saw Eddie Griffin play. I saw Donnie Carr play in high school. Now, high school and pros and college, it all be different. But high school – guys dominate in high school in certain ways, and it's like, man, you think they're the next Michael Jordan, but it doesn't come out. But Donnie Carr was one of the craziest high school players I ever saw play. And I played one intramural scrimmage, one summer league scrimmage against Kobe. So, I mean, I didn't really get to see him play like that, but Donnie Carr was up there for me. But
yeah, it's funny you say Eddie Griffin too, because I remember Eddie Griffin and DeJuan had gotten close. Because mm-hmm. I think Eddie had just gotten into the league, and mm-hmm. when DeJuan was like a senior, and Eddie Griffin actually came to a game at my high school to watch DeJuan play.
Yeah, he was ridiculous in high school. They came to the Leocora Center when I was at Temple to play like one of those Philly versus New York games, where it's like Sebastian Telfair and like Eddie Griffin, mm-hmm. yep. and like all of, so Eddie was dominant on all levels in high school, whether it was Philly competition, New York competition, or whoever. So he was definitely a fun watch, and I think he was on his way. Your NBC Sports Philadelphia podcasts are now on the My Teams app. Listen to Eagle Eye, Sixers Talk, Phillies Talk, and Flyers Talk right now. Man, no matter let me just say the first part. I'll get to the second part. But no matter where I go or how basketball develops, we are still reminded by the four bounces and the shot by Kawhi Leonard in Game 7, Sixers and Raptors last season. And it's starting to, like, burn a hole in my chest of pain every time I see it. But I'm bringing that up because Paul Hudrick was there at the arena, Scotiabank Arena, is that what it's called?
Scotiabank Arena, yep.
Okay. He was there for the Game 7, and Paul was a part of NBA history as well as photojournalism history, because the photographer that took the photo, and I want to get his name right because he is an award winner now, his name is Mark Blench. He was awarded the World Press Photo of the Year, Sports Photo of the Year, for the shot he took, which was apparently a few seats away from you, Paul, based on the angle that it was taken from, which is what you told us. And it's just a wide shot, and it's the ball after the fourth bounce is going in the rim, Kawhi Leonard squatted in the corner, and there's just faces and reactions, and you're like, you're glued to the photo, even if you didn't, you know, live through the pain as a Sixers fan or enjoy the euphoria as a Raptors fan, you still look at the photo because you're looking at all the faces and the reactions and what people are thinking. And there's Jody Meeks and Jeremy Lin. Oh, I forgot they were on the bench. And then there's, you know, Joel Embiid. And, you know, coming up after that shot, he's going to be walking down the tunnel with that ridiculous crying face. So it's just, you know, shout out to, you know, the photographer, Mark Lynch. But I don't know how to feel about this, man. I'm having a hard time explaining it because I'm like reliving the moment and talking about it at the same time. But you were a part of history, man. How do you feel about it?
It's weird looking back on it, you know? And
Isn't it?
That picture, it had to have been, because I was in the press box. Their arena is actually, so it's a hockey arena, first and foremost. Like, it was built for hockey games. So their press box is up high, mm-hmm. and the seats are actually great, considering, because it's made for hockey. So it's made to have an upper bowl press box.
You get that vantage point from above, yeah.
Right. So, mm-hmm. and I was at, like, center court, and they have a big, beautiful screen as well. So, like, and not that I really needed it, because you see everything really well. Like I said, I was like center court. So this photographer must have been only a few seats down from me. There were a lot of photographers up there. And he captured it so beautifully. Like you said, Dan, all those faces and all those reactions, he snapped that picture at almost the perfect time. Like, it's unbelievable how he captured it. But just putting myself back there, I just remember – the ball bouncing a couple times. It's not real. It's not what really happened, but it feels like it. That last bounce that went really high, I could have swore it was like eye level from the upper, because it just bounced so high. And we were all like, whoa, like, what is that? Like, because I've never seen that happen. I've never seen a ball hit the front of the rim and go like straight up like that. Right. Never seen it happen. So I really thought we were going to overtime. And it looked like that shot wasn't going to go in. And then it did. It was just, wow. Like, and then for me, I got to get my act together in a hurry, because I got to finish writing. Like, we write instant observations that go up when the buzzer hits. So I got to get out of shock as quickly as possible to the moment and just start typing. And I did. And actually, it's funny, because I look back on those observations I did from that game. I might be more proud of those than anything I've ever written, just because of the moment and how big it was and how stressful the situation was. The fact that I was able to kind of just take a deep breath, get focused, and do it, I'm as proud of that as I am of anything I've written for our website.
Bro, having known you all these years and watched your writing grow, you should be proud. You did a great job that series, and particularly that game, because I don't think people listening at home or watching TV or what have you, or podcast or listening, whatever, is just – those type of day, that would have to be at least a 16-hour day for you, because from the pregame stuff to the actual game itself and then the postgame stuff, it's like it feels like you've been at the arena or involved with it for like 48 hours, because you've been thinking about it ahead of time, then it's actually happening. And I remember us doing a pregame show of the Sixers Talk podcast. You were there. I was in Philly. And from the post game stuff, and I know how long it takes after the game when you're like dissecting the stuff and writing it. So props to you on some great work.
Well, thank you, Danny.
You're welcome, bro. You know, I enjoy your work, but I think the thing for me is like, I don't know as a Sixers fan if I realize how big of an NBA moment that was, because, you know, sometimes we kind of get the tunnel vision and we're only focused on our team and things like that. But that's that is the only buzzer beater in Game 7 NBA history. So that in and of itself will make it live forever. And then on top of that, you know, they end up winning the championship as well. So that all it becomes a part of the story. You know what I'm saying? Only thing for a Sixers fan I've taken away from it is the fact that I'm just glad it wasn't an Eastern Conference final game. Because if that was the shot that stopped us from getting to the champion, like, oh, my God.
But it still might have been, Danny, but that's a whole other topic we can get into.
But I also have this thing. I don't think I've said this before, but I feel like when the game is tied, those shots aren't as big. Like, the game was tied at 90, I think it was.
Yeah, I think they won 92-90.
Right. So you're shooting the ball. If you miss, you still go to overtime. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it's like Austin Rivers, Duke against North Carolina. You know, they're up two when you need a three to win. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like you're shooting with the game tied. So the pressure isn't as immense as it would be if it was win or go home. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think Kawhi Leonard felt an ounce of that pressure or any human emotion of any kind?
He did. He did. And that picture says it all, because the squat that he is in after fading away and shooting that, Joel was in his face, and he's looking. His eyes say everything, because he is willing that ball into the rim. And I'm getting weird feelings. I'm getting goosebumps. Just talking about this is bringing up all kinds of emotions. But, man, and when I think about it, to have that taken away, all of that playoff fun and excitement taken away this season sucks pretty bad.
No, it does. And that's like the biggest thing is, like, I was looking through my phone yesterday, just like some of the stuff from last year's playoff run. I just think, because for me, it was the first time I got to travel for a playoff run, and it was a cool experience. I mean, for me, I definitely had some bumps along the way. As you know, I was pretty much fighting an illness for the entire time, and I couldn't get rid of it because of the travel and because I wasn't sleeping great because, like you said, those are really long-ass days when you have a shoot-around during the day. You might get a couple hours in between to get some lunch or something, and then you're back in the arena for pregame availability and then for warm-ups and then the game. Then
yeah, you're working a double, basically.
Yeah,
you're
it's, double. And yeah. It's like that every day. And for me, and that's, you know, for people, you know, in that series, it was back and forth to Toronto and Philly the whole time, and it was just – don't get me wrong. Like, I wouldn't trade it for the world, that experience, because it was amazing, and it was – but listen – it's tough. Like, I think we made the joke last year on the podcast. Like, so you want to be a sports writer? Like, well, this is what it takes. But because I do want to be a sports writer, so I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. But I will say, I remember after Game 7, one of the vivid memories I have is because I did have it, because historical context, I was thinking to myself, man, like, Kawhi Leonard literally just turned in one of the greatest series ever. And I think it was like top five most points in a series ever in the NBA, in the history of the league. So I got it from that context. And I remember, like, it was all done, and, you know, all the availabilities were done, and I'm sitting there and I'm transcribing, and the Toronto Raptors PR person, I can't remember her name for the life of me, but really good person, really sweet woman. She comes over and she's handing out beers to all the media, like overflow beers. And she's like, listen. And
if it wasn't Labatt Blue, I don't want it from Canada.
Listen, it was the choice was Butter Labatt, so you know I went with Labatt.
Was it? It wasn't Molson? It wasn't Molson?
It was Labatt. It was Labatt or Bud. Those are the choices. So she comes up, and at first I was kind of like, nah. She's like, listen, it's been a long series. Why don't you take it? I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to take this. So that's like one of my lasting memories, is just having a beer after Game 7 while I'm transcribing quotes and after hearing Joel Embiid cry.
If only you could have brought it home. I would have loved to see that beer on that shelf behind you. I would have loved to see.
Nah, that was that down the hatch.
Was it ice cold?
Oh, yeah, it was ice cold. It was great.
Bro, after a day like that, that beer lasted like 3 seconds. That beer lasted.
And I was like, and I also, there was a finality to it. It was like, I knew I was going to get to go home and like go to sleep. So I was like, all right, let's do it. I'm going to drink this beer. I'm going to sleep great tonight. Hit the flight back to Philly and be done with it.
Wellington University extends its deepest appreciation to the brave individuals who are working tirelessly on the front lines to protect, serve, and care for us during this unprecedented time. Thank you. Will Mew stands with you. I got the perfect segue because our next topic of discussion was something we had in the bag, but fits so much so for this situation because we are going to discuss, you know, what rule changes we would want to see. If we could change one rule in the NBA, what rule would it be? And for me, this was already the rule I was going to change, but in this conversation, it fits so well because I want to change the goaltending rules to the international rules because Joel Embiid could have went and threw that right out of the rim. Because the goaltender rules overseas, internationally, you can touch those balls around the rim and swat them away, and there's no offensive, you know, cylinder and all that. Like, that's all gone. So
you can pin it up against the glass. Yeah, whatever.
Right.
Like,
it's, yeah, you can grab it out of the rim, the whole bit. So, yeah, that would be my rule change as we segue into something else. Because
I got to be honest, that would have been mine too. So I don't know how much we're going to – I mean, for a different reason, just in general, I think because, like, so much of the replay time that's been wasted, I feel like, is over – oh, goaltender or not. There was a Damian Lillard controversy. Remember that whole play where he got ripped because, like, that was clearly goaltending. But if you take that rule away, then we're done. Then we don't have to worry about it. Then that's the rule. And we live with it, and that's the way it goes.
And it creates more synergy with the game because there's, you know, the European international players, whoever, wherever they come from, they can still acclimate to the NBA game. You know, you can keep that trapezoid lane. I'm not interested in that at all. I like the dimensions of the NBA floor. But I think that goaltender interference thing, and it doesn't have to be as lax as it is on, you know, internationally. You know, maybe there are some offensive rules where you can't, you know, go in the rim or what have you. But defensively, if it's rolling around the rim, swat that thing off of there. You know, forget about the if it touches the glass first on the block and all that. Like, we can just do away with all those things. And like you said, it will save so much time and effort and energy into the replay stuff. And it gets weird because you're stopping down at certain points and adding points and taking points away, you know, depending on the situation. So that's how I feel.
Yeah, I agree. And then I like the idea, too. Like, our game, the game of basketball has become – these athletes are so ridiculous now, and it's only – evolving more into some of the athletes you see around the league. So I'm just thinking about how exciting it would be with a ball dangling on the rim to have, like, I don't know, like, two elite athletic guys like LeBron and someone else just, like, and, like, Ben Simmons going after a ball at the same time it's hanging on the rim.
Right, right.
That would be
Ben's
so
trying
fun.
To dunk it through. LeBron's trying to block it at the same time. Yeah, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, exactly. So to me, it would add to me another level of excitement to a game-ending situation. Like, it could make or break a game, and it would just make it a little bit more interesting, in my opinion.
I think I've been without sports and basketball a long time because I just started seeing this LeBron and then, like, collision at the rim. Like,
I hear you.
It's been a while, man. Paul, anything specific you're working on for the website right now?
So I'm actually writing off one of our topics that we talked about last time, and that dream fit player – of who we think would be just like a perfect fit for the Sixers. And I'm just going to – I got six names, and I'm going to lay out why they're a great
topic.
Fit, why they're a great fit, and then why it could happen, and then why it won't happen. So I'm gonna get your hopes up, but then I'm also going to throw some cold water on you too.
Bro, that's rock solid for our quarantine time. That would have been rock solid during the NBA season because – As many names, and you know how the Philly sports fans are. Like, we're always ready for some hypotheticals when it comes to improving our team. Do we want to tease Tuesday's pod and next week's pod and the opportunity that might be on the horizon, or do you want to keep that in the bag?
I say we keep it all in the bag because there's still a lot of moving parts we got to worry about for things. So let's just keep it all in the bag for now, and then
all right.
Yeah, I will tease though that so Noah Levick's working on a really great story. I don't want to reveal too much, but it is coming out Monday, and it's going to revolve around the 2001 Sixers that played in the finals that we talked about last time. It's a great, great piece that he already has. He might be adding to it. He might not be. We'll see. But it's. I want to tease it because I think it's worth teasing because I think it's going to turn out excellent, and everyone should be very excited for it.
Just Just like that, we're out of time here on Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu Works, for our esteemed producer, Ben Barry, for the level-headed one, Paul Hudrick. And, you know, shout out to Steve Graham, who we have not linked up with for a while. Pickup Truck Chuck, we are thinking about you. He's still working and doing great stuff for the website and whatnot. So shout out to Steve Graham. I'm Danny Pommels. Thanks for listening to Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University.